Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and it's always fantastic to have you all join us this week, as always. We're going to do a special episode here that we recorded a little while ago at a conference where we had our co-host Sam Bradley sit down with a special guest and talk about some disaster response things. In this particular episode, we have Sam talking with Ray Kemp. Now, Ray is a first responder filmmaker. He actually records specialized videos, educational videos, and other things for a variety of people out there in the space of EMS. And what he does in this particular episode is talk about what happened when he, based in Kansas City, was able to go and look at and record some of the things going on during the Ferguson City riots following the problems they had there. So check this out. It's a very special episode talking with Ray Kemp, and I think you'll enjoy it. Before we get to it, I do want to remind you to thank our sponsors, Paragon Medical Education Group. You know, Paragon is a great supporter of education for first responders in disaster situations. They have a great experiential format that is unlike anything you've seen. To find out more about it, head over and check out their website. There's a great video that explains what they do. It's over at paragonmedicalgroup.com. You can also follow them on Twitter at paragonmededu, and you can always follow them and catch up with them via the Disaster Podcast here at disasterpodcast.com. That's it. Let's go ahead and get on into this special episode with Sam Bradley and filmmaker for EMS and responders, Ray Kemp.
Welcome to another edition of the Disaster Podcast, coming to you from EMS World Expo in New Orleans, where we're having a lot of fun, aren't we, Ray?
Yeah.
Yes, we are.
Great time, sure.
This is going to be awesome, because this guy here, I mean, I don't know how many years I've seen him running around with his video cameras doing his thing. He's a videographer, but he does more than just EMS shows. You do a lot of interesting things, and I've never been able to corral him. And doing videography myself, I'm always fascinated by some of the stuff he does. You work for EMS-1.
Yeah, I'm actually a contractor for EMS-1, but it's been 8 years.
I started my eighth year
with them this April, coming April. Yeah.
So what are some of the kind of things you do in your career?
We film the bulk of their EMS and fire content in St. Louis. That's where I'm based out of, and we have some wonderful arrangements with EMS and fire services in the area. We're allowed to ride and film with the paramedics, supervisors, and what have you from several different facets of operations up there, so a wide variety that we can work with. We even film in the ER, so we have that accessibility to us as well. We have some amazing contracts. This goes all the way back to my still photography days when I had all these arrangements back then, and I was doing stuff for Gems Magazine and all the book publishers. But about 8 years ago, I made the transition from still photography over into video. Married up with EMS-1 at the time and haven't looked back.
Marriage made in heaven.
Yeah, it's been a good run, very good run.
So, you know, one of the things we never talk about is the media in the middle of some of these really dicey situations and looking at their perspective of it, because we've never had anybody like you to sit and tell us that. So you had a bit of a dicey situation you were telling me about yesterday.
Well, yeah, you know, we've been filming with Christian Hospital EMS up in North St. Louis County for about 5 years now. We actually have a contractual arrangement to do that. So we pretty well have carte blanche. We ride with their supervisors, the crews, and we get ER access as well, and it's worked out very well for us with them. And Christian area of coverage there is also includes Ferguson.
Yes.
So when we had the Ferguson blew up a couple years ago.
The infamous Ferguson incident. Yeah,
when it blew up a couple years ago, I immediately, the very first night of rioting, we went back up and started riding with the crews again. And even that night was dicey, because when I went up there, the looting was already going on. So I was trying to find a place to rendezvous that wasn't being looted, where the supervisor could meet me. And every shopping center that I pulled into to try and get out of my car and rendezvous to be picked up, it was being looted. So I had to move on to another one, and it just seemed to progress. So for a little while there, it was
following you or something.
Well, and it really was. The reason was that the police were advancing onto the looters, shopping center by shopping center. So they were just literally driving them down the road. So once the police showed up, they moved to the next shopping center and so on and so forth. So where I was over a mile away from where the actual shooting took place with Michael Brown.
Wow.
That's how
wow.
dispersed area. So it all started the first, it all started the very first night.
Oh my God. So how did that work here? So you're right dead in the middle. Now, weren't you kind of in an exclusive situation?
Well, we're exclusive with Christians. So, I mean, just having that accessibility on the front line right off the bat with EMS during what I didn't realize at the time was going to become a historical event.
Really?
What I just really thought it was good. I thought it was going to be a one-night deal, people upset, whatever you want to call it. And this thing would die down in a few days. Had no idea it would blow up, you know, into what it was. Never realized they were going to burn down the Quick Trip store, which they did later. And everything just kept escalating from there. So it was, but we had that accessibility. And what was interesting, the first two nights we were riding with the supervisor, the police were not really communicating with other responders in the area, fire or EMS. So we had no idea what roads were being closed off, where to go, what activity was going on. There was just a complete disconnection from law enforcement in terms of...
That's a little scary.
It was very scary. But what happened, though, is I'm sitting in the back seat of the supervisor's vehicle, and the protesters were very active on Twitter. Anytime the police made a move, closed off a road, set up a barricade here, whatever, they're putting it on Twitter. So I'm in the back.
So how did you find that?
Oh, just Ferguson, you know, hashtag Ferguson.
Just started
searching, boom, there it all was. So every time they were, and that helped us because now we knew what roads were being closed off.
The good stuff.
Well, because they were watching every move the police were making. So if they closed off a road, they stuck it on Twitter. So now we knew what roads were closed off that we couldn't go down or have difficulty, and gave EMS a better idea where we could stage and what, even though we had no communication with law enforcement at the time, for whatever reason.
It
was a week before they even set up a command. But Twitter was our communication method for a few nights. We were able to look at the Twitter feeds and see exactly what was being moved around and what have you. So
so there was kind of different phases to that incident. I guess when the verdict came down, things kind of went south in a hurry.
Yeah, it did. And we had already, going back to the initial rioting, my crew and myself, we decided to disengage ourselves from EMS about the third night. EMS and police were not going into any areas where there was active protesting. They were staying as far away as they could possibly could without inciting. They felt they might incite something and what have you. We got it. But by the third day, I realized this was becoming something historical, and we really needed to film more from the front line. And my logic was, if something goes down, EMS will be coming in, we're already going to be there, and we'll film you guys. And I was going over this with Chris Sebelero at the time. We'll film you from the front line. So we left, and we were no longer riding with EMS, but we went up to the riding, up to where the tear gas was being launched and all that. We spent several nights up there filming that, right along the riot lines and what have you. And we were able to capture some amazing, amazing material.
I'll bet.
But what it did give us also was we quickly got an insight as to the activity that was going on during the day as well as at night. And what I'm saying by the activity was, during the day, we had our typical protesters out there. They'd be out there with lawn chairs and signs and what have you. And it was we would go in amongst them and do interviews and what have you. And it was very good. But what I did notice was, as it got darker, when the sun was going down, and I coined it the changing of the guard, another element was coming into the burned out Quick Trip area, and assembling.
Darker element.
Well, it was just. But these individuals were mostly male, no signs, and they would gather there. And the protesters were done. They were packing up their signs and going down the street and heading back home. And these individuals is what you saw mostly at night, you know, heaving the Molotovs at the police, being tear gassed,
so
and what have you. So much more violent.
There's
a much more violent group that would come in. So there were two elements, I guess, if you want to call it that, of protesters. You had your fairly peaceful ones during the day, your violent ones were showing up at night. And that's
so
we had to kind of jockey around with that a little bit. But we had a good sense of what was going on, and we never really had an incident. We had a verbal altercation at one time. They were going off on us because we kind of stayed a little too late in an area we probably shouldn't have been. But that was it, you know. So once we had a good idea of the behavior of the protesters, what have you, we found it very easy to interact with them and film and not really have any problems. But we kind of have already had the lay of the land by then, so that really helped out quite a bit.
I think I remember telling you, you were set up kind of shooting out this way and you could hear this activity behind you. And you were like, well, maybe we should just kind of like not pay any attention to that.
that was when the decision not to indict came down, which was in November now. So we've gone from August now up to November. And we originally were over at Ferguson Police. We were going to film there. National Guard was there. We had a riot line in front of the police station and all that. And my crew was set up there. And when we'd filmed there many times before, I never had an issue. But that particular time, I was very uneasy. There was a lot of people in the street. There was no police presence. And about 10 minutes before the verdict, or the notice of not to indict came out, I told my guys, let's pack up. We're going to go back to North Command and stage from there. And we were the only crew. I had already worked out an arrangement weeks earlier to give us access to the North Command, which was the main command center where police, EMS, and all of us gathering. And my crew, we were the only production crew allowed in North Command.
Wow.
CNN, Fox News, none of them were allowed into that area.
That's
we had for 2 weeks unencumbered access in and out of North Command all the time. And we were able to get a lot of amazing material there.
So CNN is watching your footage. And
well, you know, actually, yeah. So, one of the interviews we did was actually picked up on New York Times. I used some of the material out of our interviews for the New York Times at one point in time. So we left moments before the indictment was announced and decided to go back to North Command, and we'll just stage from there. And as we were going down West Florissant, I made the remark, I said, oh, look, there's police officers in every shopping center, you know, to protect the businesses
when this.
So we went into North, and we no longer pulled into North Command, and the fire guys are all jumping in their trucks. And I asked what was going on. They said, well, the McDonald's is on fire.
Whoa.
I said, well, we just came by the McDonald's. They didn't see anything. So we literally jumped back in my Suburban. We swung in behind the fire contingent going out of North Command. And it turned out to be a beauty supply and a cell phone store next door to the McDonald's was on fire.
Oh, well, thank God.
But the
we
first thing I noticed is when we pulled up there, the street was completely empty. All the police were gone. The police that we saw coming in were no longer there anymore. So they're dropping lines in the street. We set up right across the street there on West Florissant, my cameraman and I hear noise behind me. And I turned around and they're looting the store right behind, about 30 feet from us. So I told my cameraman, I said, well, they're looting behind us. Don't shoot that. We'll be in trouble. Just keep the camera focused to the fire across the street, because now the fire is rolling out of the building. It's really taking off well. And I was correct. They never bothered us. They were looting all the stores right behind us. There was no police there at all. My cameraman and I were the only media there at that particular moment, because we kind of came in behind the fire contingent. So that was a little unnerving, what have you. But so the firefighters knocked down the fire, left all the lines in the street, and then left, pulled out of the area. By now, a riot line is assembling in front of us. There was no protesters yet still. There was noise down towards Canfield where Michael Brown was killed. And so we just started following the riot line on down West Florissant. And I'm kind of paralleling with my Suburban, getting out, filming, and we kind of moved down close. Once the riot line got in view of Canfield, that's when the gunfire erupted violently. And you'll see it in one of our videos. You actually see us filming. You'll hear the gunfire go off immensely. You'll even see the riot line start to break up, because we know the sounds are very distinct. You know there's muzzles pointed in that direction. And we go diving behind my Suburban. So it's in the footage. And if I'm not mistaken, in 45 seconds, you'll hear 70-some-odd gunfire rounds going off at that point there. But again, it didn't happen until the riot line got in view of Canfield. But the problem, one of the things we learned with that was the riot line was down here now. So when the firefighters actually returned, because the building did rekindle, the riot line's here, so they actually inadvertently became collateral damage, because the intended targets all throughout this thing was law enforcement. So I think some of the things we learned from this with our footage was maybe at some point better practices on what I'll dub urban warfare, because the riot line concept is something that goes all the way back to the 60s.
Yeah.
But why are you placing riot lines in the line of fire with EMS and fire back here? You may not even needed the riot line. The riot line could have been moved off to the side, so that if there was any gunfire directed towards the riot line, it would go in this direction and not in the same direction where the firefighters were working. So our footage, I think, really provided a very upfront and close perspective of this incident. And I really firmly believe it's something that places can look at later and we can even learn from it, because it was a learning experience for us.
Well, you'd think the police agencies might have studied what you captured that they wouldn't ordinarily see.
Yeah, and it hasn't happened yet. I think there's still too much activity going on in the country right now.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that later they're going to come back and look at, because we did verify the next morning that there was gunfire trained our way. Because when we were in North Command, we spotted fresh bullet rounds in the front of one of the Lenco Bearcats.
Uh-oh.
So St. Louis County Police
Those
came and looked at it.
Tough vehicles.
Well, and this particular Lenco had a very unique catwalk that came out over it.
Oh, wow.
So we went back and looked at my footage. And it was, in fact, the Lenco that passed us there the night before when all the gunfire erupted. So we knew that was this exact same Lenco that moved to the front line. That meant that those rounds that hit it were some of the rounds that you saw in my video, heard in my video, being fired. So we know at least two of them were directed.
We have one of those guys over here on the show floor. My friend Mike is over there.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are some.
So it was, yeah, I never really intended to get that close that night. We were just following Riley. We were getting some amazing material and all that. But when all the gunfire erupted, that's when I knew we were a little too close. And
that was kind of my question. It's like, I got this great shot right here,
mm-hmm.
but what's it going to cost me to hang it out
we film up there. We've been filming up there for the last 5 years, and gunfire is nothing new. Matter of fact, I was on a call up there just 2 weeks ago in a neighborhood where an individual had pushed his girlfriend down a flight of stairs, and we're waiting for the grandmother to come out and pick up the child. So while we're outside waiting, this is about 11 o'clock at night, on the very next street over to us, gunfire erupts. Had nothing to do with our call. That's very normal out there. That's easily the fifth or sixth time I've been on a call out there where gunfire has erupted on an adjacent street from where we were filming. And my concern up there is, and I tell this to them up there, to the crews up there, I said, the concern is the gunfire is not aimed at EMS. Your biggest concern are stray bullets, because this gunfire activity is very common. It's part of retaliation. They'll come pull up in front of a house. Four or five guys will get out of a car and just fill the house full of bullets to take off. They
Make
have no idea who's on the other street. We have this all the time. We just had a 9-year-old girl get killed by a stray bullet a while ago.
I was going to say, unfortunately, hit the grandmother, the little kid.
Yeah,
you know?
So the biggest problem they have up there as far as getting shot is from stray gunfire. And it's very active up there, very, very active. So
you guys, I mean, there's protocols for EMS and police. And, you know, I know in working in California, EMS and fire would stage until they called, the police called a code 4 and confirmed the scene was safe for them to come in. You guys are just out there.
Yeah,
you're on your own.
You really, well, the police are always there. St. Louis County Police is always there. But the point is, just because the police is there, really, you still don't have a safe scene, because it's very common to have gunfire erupt, or we've had incidences where the scene would become disturbed, family members would show up, or the culprit happened to stumble back into the area for some silly reason, fights break out, guns come out. So you have to be very conscientious of the scene, because the scene's evolving constantly.
Well, and I just remember, and I can't remember where it was, but there was a firefighter who was shot on a food on the stove call, and I don't know all the details on that, but oh my God, who would think?
Yeah. So
you know, firefighters don't walk in with vests on everywhere they go.
No, and I think there's a certain complacency in this industry right now because of that. If you have areas where you've known there's been active gunfire in the area over X period of time, you should be vested up. It's not gunfire most likely pointed at you. It's going to be those stray rounds that find their way over where you are. And I've seen it way too often.
That's a really good point. We were talking to Ed Rocht, who's the medical director for AMR, and you know, some of his people were bringing that up to them. It's like, well, you got the cops in their gear, you got the firefighters in their gear, and here I am with reflective tape and, you know, a target on my back. And it's like, that's a really good point. So now there's a lot of debate on whether EMS should be.
I don't think there's any evidence of that, though. That's where I really kind of step off that line. And I can say this with experience, because again, we don't have evidence that EMS has been direct targets.
But you, like you said, they could be collateral damage. If
it's the collateral damage is the most highest risk.
So is that worth having them wear a vest?
Yes, absolutely. They'll put vests on if they know they're going into a shooter situation. We get that and what have you. Or if even up there, if there's some active protests going on, they'll put vests on. But again, your lowest risk hasn't been at the protests. Every day on these calls in these bad areas, the risk is there because gunfire is constant up there. Constant.
Yeah.
And so that's why you should be wearing your vest. It's going to be the collateral damage or the stray bullet that's going to that's going to nail. And I'm concerned myself as a producer.
I'm thinking maybe you should have one.
Well,
we
do. They have extra vests, so we've been wearing vests ourselves up there now. So it's, but we're very concerned about that. So you even on the scene, you have to have a constant awareness of the surroundings. And I think in EMS, that's
situational
difficult.
Awareness, yes.
Because it's so easy to get complacent. Mm-hmm. You have to constantly watch what's going on because that scene changes just like that. We've had to bolt from several scenes because it became, even though the police were there, it was overwhelming and there wasn't enough police there. And there have been numerous occasions where we had to leave the scene.
Yeah.
It was becoming
unruly. You got to say, okay, I'm going to miss a great shot, but I'm also going to be alive.
Well, it's everybody, yeah. We the EMS as well, we have to evacuate the area or get out of there quickly because the more people are showing up on the scene. Family members are showing up. They're becoming very, very upset. Fist fights are breaking out around us. I've seen that many. I've even filmed it. I got footage of that stuff happening and what have you. So that's a dangerous scene because out of all those individuals, we know some are carrying weapons.
Yeah.
And at any moment, they'll pop out a gun and try to shoot somebody else, and that bullet could hit one of us.
Good point.
So this is very...
That's a good lesson for any of us out there.
It really is. Yeah, yeah.
We never work in a completely secure environment.
No.
It may seem like it, but stuff happens.
Absolutely.
Ray, this is great. I hope all you EMSers out there really kind of understand what they go through to get you the wonderful footage and the stories that come out in EMS One and EMS World and other publications. So where do they find this good stuff that they're now going to want to all go out there and find?
Well, the footage that we shot with Ferguson is all out there on EMS One. Some of it's over on Police One. Because we were doing
a
joint thing there, so you'll see that out there. The Katie Keeter interview that we did with one of the paramedics out there, we did get a Telly Award for that. That's available out
there on
EMS One. Great insight on what it's like to be a paramedic working in that environment and how she was concerned because she's watching the town being burned down and what have you. So it was a very, very compelling interview. Great one to watch. We have the interviews that we shot with Chris Ceballero, where he's talking, because it was his crews that came on the scene first with Michael Brown, so he goes into detail about that, and he gives a great insight on how they started to prepare for this. So we have those interviews out there as well on EMS One. I believe if you just go out there and you just search Ferguson or something like that, they're going to pop up out there. So
now when you see this great material out there, you know what we had to go through to get it, and this is the guy that does that. So thank you, Ray. I mean,
thank
when you told
so
me that
much.
Yesterday, I went, oh my God, we got to tell people about that.
Thank you so much.
And my hands are cold. I'm
That's
freezing.
All right.
So thank you very much, and good luck in
thank
whatever
you.
Else you may find yourself in next time.
We'll try and stay safe.
I know if it's dicey, you're going to be out there with that camera getting us that good story.
Thank you.
So we have to leave you for now. We got so much more good content coming up on this channel. A lot of good shows. We still got about a day and a half left of this show. EMS World, and there's the boss right over there. EMS World in wonderful
New Orleans.
And I think we all had a lot of fun last night, didn't we?
A little too much for me.
I've heard a lot.
I'm here.
So this is a disaster podcast. We want to thank Physio Control for allowing us to be here and doing all these great interviews. My sponsor, Paragon Medical Education Group, who are working very hard at this conference also. And so we're going to say goodbye for now. I'm Sam Bradley. Please find us on thedisasterpodcast.com. Give us some ideas of what you'd like us to talk about, because we never seem to run out, but, you know, we want to hear what you want. So for now, see you later, and remember that disaster medicine is not your everyday medicine.